Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I meet with military veterans to learn what they do in their civilian career, how they got there, and advice for other veterans seeking to do the same. My guest today for episode number 166 is Stephen Colley.
I applied to a bunch of law schools, and while I was waiting for their responses, I went to go work on Capitol Hill. I went from being a captain of Marines in charge of, about 50 Marines, and became an intern working with a sophomore from college. It was quite the experience, to say the least, but I really enjoyed it, and it was really eye-opening for me.
Well, for my guest today, after his military service, Steve sought out a career in public service and has worked as a staff member on the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. So for those of you who are interested in a career in politics or public service, this is a great episode to listen to. Also, if you're curious about what's going on in Capitol Hill as it relates to Veterans Affairs, this is also a great interview to check out. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find show notes that feature links to everything we discuss. You'll also check out our brand new website where we've got links to different types of interviews about every conceivable career path, functional role, or skill set you may need in your civilian career. We've got a new video section, and we've got a new events and publications section. So definitely check out the new website at beyondtheuniform.io. So with that, let's dive in to my conversation with Steve Colley. Joining me today in Washington, D.C. is Steve Colley. Steve, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Oh, thanks for having me.
I wanted to give special thanks to Steve's wife Kristen from episode 144, as well as the Veterans in Consulting Seminar for connecting us. And for listeners, Steve is a professional staff member on the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served in the Marine Corps for over 6 years. After his military service, he worked as a congressional fellow at the U.S. House of Representatives, as a researcher at the think tank Center for Strategic and International Studies, and he attended the Harvard University John F. Kennedy School of Government. So, Steve, maybe to start things off, if you were talking to someone who's on active duty, how would you explain to them what you do as a professional staff member on the Senate Committee on Veterans Affairs?
Yeah. Well, once again, thanks for having me. And what I would say is, first of all, it's important to understand the inner workings of Congress beyond, Civics 101, and understand that Congress is run by not just the members, like the senators and the congressmen, but also by the personal offices of all the members, as well as the committees in both chambers. while the personal offices of the members of Congress have their own staffs, such as legislative aides, press and communications people, IT folks, staff assistants and schedulers, and chiefs of staff and policy analysts, the committees who oversee the federal agencies also have their own staffs. The senators or congressmen who serve in these committees, they do dictate, how they want legislation to go, how much money they want to appropriate, what authorizations they're willing to give those agencies. And they, as oversee the actions conducted by the leadership of those agencies. For an example, for our military folks out there, the House Armed Services Committee or the Senate Armed Services Committee oversees everything the Department of Defense does. It authorizes all military operations. It appropriates, the over $600 billion that they receive almost annually. And likewise, my committee, which is the Committee on Veterans Affairs, we oversee the Department of Veterans Affairs. And so basically what we do is we have in our committees counselors, we have our analysts, we have press folks and professional staff members like myself, who are kind of like legislative aides. And in my job, I analyze policy problems. I try to determine what's the best policy prescription. I try to formulate legislation after talking to many folks, and then we put bills together and negotiate the legislation to its passage, if it gets that far. Sometimes it doesn't. But we also do overseeing on behalf of our bosses, and we also meet with stakeholders, employees from the federal agencies, advocates, et cetera. So, in a nutshell, and I know that's I kind of said a lot there. It's kind of, you know, what we do as professional staff members, as legislative aides. You know, it's the inner workings of Congress that I truly enjoy. And so that's that.
And I know that a lot of our listeners, one of the questions they enjoy most is just getting into the nitty gritty of what your day-to-day life looks like. And as detailed as you're comfortable getting in terms of hours that you know, what time you get into the office, how late you work, could you kind of walk us through, I imagine no day is typical, but just kind of walk through an example day of what sorts of things you're doing and what your life looks like.
Yeah. Well, you're right. No day is similar to any other day. It is a roller coaster ride, and it reflects what's going on in Congress, the good and the bad. You know, we have days where, you know, some of the you know, legislative aides are up until 3 a.m. waiting to see if we're shutting down the government. And then we have days when it's in August and they're in recess and, you know, the congressmen and senators are, you know, working in their districts and states, and the folks in D.C. are, you know, sitting back and trying to formulate ideas, you know, for the future. And it, you know, it's a little bit, you know, it's not as busy as, you know, the rest of the year. But I would say on a day-to-day basis, it's a lot of meetings. It's a lot of meeting with people. It's building a network. You know, it's politics on the other side of things that people don't see. You know, it's talking to stakeholders, it's talking to federal employees, it's talking to advocates and, you know, all types of people, other legislative aides, you know, other staff members, you know, to really try to do the kind of negotiation that you don't see on Fox News or CNN. You know, it's really trying to make that compromise that I really think the American people don't, you know, get an opportunity to see. So we meet with a lot of folks. We also read a lot of policy. We read a lot of material given to us from the Congressional Research Service, from annual reports from the federal agencies, you know, from all sorts of things. And then we write memos, you know, for our boss. So it's a combination of, you know, the reading and writing and, you know, the interactions and, you know, social network that you create with those that you work with, you know, to try to formulate the best policies, you know, for the line of work that you're doing. And it's difficult. You know, it's very difficult, but it's also really rewarding when you see something impactful happen for, you know, veterans across America or, you know, for what other policy issue you work with.
And I'd like to, you know, I was curious, like, how someone becomes a professional staff member, but I'd love to kind of just drill into your story. Could you take us through, you know, from your time in the Marines, how you – did you always have your sights set on this and just how your career has led you to this point?
Yeah, no, not at all, actually. I had no idea that I would be where I am today. You know, I always knew that I wanted to do – some form of public service, as, you know, cliche as that sounds. You know, I wanted to serve in the Marines the day after 9/11. I was 17 years old. I wanted to enlist, and, you know, I just wasn't old enough to do it on my own. Ended up going to the Naval Academy, met a lot of great folks there, met my wife there, went into the Marine Corps. In 2008, I became a logistics officer. Served with 1st Battalion, 2nd Marines, and an infantry unit. And we ended up deploying as part of the surge in 2010. You know, and I had a great camaraderie with, you know, all my brothers of 1-2. And really, that moment in my life, you know, was something that kind of led me to wanting to serve veterans and serve, you know, people, you know, from then on out. I got back from Afghanistan, ended up moving to California with my wife, and then I got out, you know, after about 6 years in the Marine Corps. And I knew I wanted to get involved in politics. I didn't necessarily want to be a congressman or, you know, politician, but I wanted to be involved in policymaking of some form. I had no idea where to go with that. I thought going to law school would probably be the best route. I applied to a bunch of law schools, and while I was waiting for their responses, I went to go work on Capitol Hill. And I went from being a captain of Marines in charge of, like about 50 Marines, and left there, living in DC while my wife was working in Quantico as a captain, and became an intern working with a sophomore from college. It was quite the experience, to say the least, but I really enjoyed it. And it was really eye-opening for me, for many reasons, because at this moment in my life, I had transitioned to the civilian world for the first time in my life. I was born and raised on a military base. My father was in the Air Force. I went to the Naval Academy, was in the Marines. And when I was 29 years old, I finally, stepped on the other side where many people think the grass is greener. It is and it isn't. And I learned a lot of lessons there. I interned there for about a month with Congressman Raul Ruiz, a great guy from California who still serves veterans. And I ran into one of my classmates from the Naval Academy, just going to a bunch of meetings and trying to meet people there. And he's like, "Hey, there's one office that works, on the House Armed Services Committee, and they're the only ones that don't have a military fellow from DOD. You should apply." And these guys were all my peers. I could have done that program had I stayed in the Marine Corps potentially. So I applied, I got it, and then my eyes really opened up to, the world of policymaking. And at that point, I realized that it might be too much money to pay for law school. Not saying that law school is bad. It just wasn't for me. So I pulled my applications and stuck with the fellowship program until my boss lost his election, which is when I went on to work for the Center for Strategic and International Studies, focused on the Chinese military, and it was as a research assistant because I had my eyes set on a master's in public policy,
Is
which is what I did.
that just kind of curious, is that par for the course where it's kind of like if you're working in a lot of these areas in politics, it's like you once the party that you're working with or the person you're working with, once they're out, it's just kind of like you're now left to scramble to find something else to do for a little while. You're not going to continue in that route for a couple of years.
Potentially. I mean, I think where I was at fault is that I was a little naive, and I didn't develop the kind of network that I should have to be able to continue on Capitol Hill. And it was a big lesson learned for me. I'll give you an example. So when I got hired as a military fellow in this congressional office, 4 months later, I asked, like, who was I up against, in this application process? And they said, "Oh man, you're up against PhDs, you're up against guys who have 20 years of experience." And I was like, "Well, why did you choose me? I only had 6 years in the Marine Corps. I didn't even have a master's degree yet." And they said, "We chose you because we knew Congressman Raul Ruiz's chief of staff, and he said that you were a great guy.
Oh, wow.
And because he knew you, we trusted him and we went with you instead."
Well, I mean
So,
that's that and that's something that could be true of pretty much any career path is that there's these random connections and kind of who knows who, and then it's when you're looking at a bunch of resumes and a bunch of really great candidates, it might be the thing that tilts things in your favor.
And it was at that moment that I realized that, a lot of people would say on Capitol Hill, "Oh, well, it was just luck that I got this job." No, it's not luck. It's the network that you build, and you develop credibility and loyalty. It's politics, and that's the way I see it. And it's not as much the way that I got the job on the Senate Veterans Affairs Committee. A little bit. My predecessor, who was also a Naval Academy graduate, he was a former Navy SEAL, great guy, really smart staffer. Everyone liked him a lot before he left. From what I understand is, he gave the good word and I got the job.
Wow.
And so I think that's very valuable, to develop those relationships in the right way. I mean, so for what it's worth.
And then you kind of then go from there. You're at this think tank, and I've had one other guest on the show talk briefly about think tanks, but could you just kind of share what your experience was like there and what your work was like?
Yeah. The think tank world is really cool, in my opinion, especially if you want to be an academic. It really puts you in the crossroads of, research at like the university level, like PhD level, and with, federal agencies. My boss, Dr. Anthony Cordesman, great guy, has been working intelligence and military issues for like, oh my God, I don't know, like 50 years or something. He would go brief various agencies and would bring along his research assistants, and some of those research assistants ended up getting really good jobs in the federal government because of his pedigree and his reputation. But you also get to work. You get a little more autonomy. At least we did working for him. I don't know about the other folks, but I felt like we got a little more autonomy in terms of like how we wanted to take research and the book that we were writing, and it just made it a lot of fun at an intellectual level. We ended up writing a book, Dr. Cordesman and I, and one of the interns there, on the Chinese military back in 2015. And it was an incredible experience. Really set me up well for grad school because I went from, writing fitness reports in the Marine Corps, and kind of lost my grammar skills, to, getting ready for grad school again at Harvard. So, it was a great experience, and I would recommend that, if anyone has any interest in the academic world or, wants to find another pathway into, federal government, take a look at the think tanks that are out there. It's a great resource.
And then, so after that, it sounds like you had your sights set on getting your master's, and so you go to Harvard's John F. Kennedy School of Government. And when you leave there, do you know do you know that you want to enter back into politics? I imagine that's kind of why you went there, as some sort of public service.
So I was, I guess, I, yeah, I was trying, I was looking into different routes, to get back into public policy. And, one of them was to go back to Capitol Hill, either as a legislative assistant or, if I was fortunate enough as a professional staff member. But I was also looking at the Presidential Management Fellowship, which I highly recommend, for veterans out there that are looking, to get back and, to do good federal government work. As a veteran, you get preferential treatment in the application process, to become a professional or a Presidential Management Fellow. And essentially what that does is you serve 2 years in a federal agency, after being accepted, and they put you at a high GS level, and you get to rub elbows with, a lot of the leadership, and it gives you a stepping stone that other federal employees typically don't get. So overall, I've heard, it was a good program. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to get it, which is fine because I was lucky to get the job that I have now. And to be quite honest, I would prefer this job, but that's just my own personal decision. I know a lot of PMFs that are doing great things and are going to continue doing great things. But I'm trying to remember, like, what was your question again? I
Oh, it was
apologize.
just kind of making that transition from Harvard back into politics.
So one of the things that I wanted to do, and I didn't think of this until towards the end of my time at Harvard, was to run for politics. The Harvard Kennedy School really gives you a strong sense of empowerment with a lot of the professors that are there, a lot of the fellows that come, and this is right after the 2016 election. I'm sure you and your audience can imagine that a very liberal school, went into mourning the day after the election. But after that, they're like, well, let's take a look at this. Let's not just, bash President Trump just for being, a Republican or for being who he is. Let's try to find the best way to work with him and find, the best route politically, for us, wanting to go into politics, because everyone that's graduating from the Kennedy School is going to go into politics or public policy of some sort. And it was at that moment, after working with a lot of people, that I was actually considering running for Congress, to be quite honest. And I had a lot of my classmates, a lot of them veterans, who are currently running for Congress. And it was really eye-opening for me, the process that those guys had to go through, the amount of fundraising they had to do, the amount of work they had to do that took them away from providing a message, a political message that they wanted to work with. And then there was, other issues, in terms of my personal life that I decided against it. But, going to a grad school like the Kennedy School, and there are other great grad schools out there in public policy, they just give you this sense of empowerment. And, there's a lot of great folks that, you can sit down and talk to after class, over a couple beers, and talk about, how do we change the world, as cliche as it may sound.
I'm wondering, so, well, first let me ask you, because, obviously you work with Veterans Affairs. What would you like to share about your experience there, or what should veterans know about what's going on right now?
Yeah, so for the veterans out there, I know they have, like us veterans, have a tendency to hate the VA. But the thing is, there's a lot of programs out there, that not just the VA, but federal government, at the state level, at the local level, offer veterans. The private sector, they offer a lot of really good things. And most veterans, from my experience working on the committee, just don't know what they don't know. But in terms of the Department of Veterans Affairs and our committee, we're looking at, continuing to hold the VA accountable. We passed a big bill last year, to, hold, those senior employees accountable. It kind of stems from the 2014 VA scandals that we saw in Phoenix and, elsewhere, people saw on the news. Another one, a big one that we're working on right now, is healthcare. We have our Caring for Our Veterans Act that we're currently negotiating right now. It passed our committee almost unanimously, and it looks like the White House might support this. And basically, what it does is, it puts healthcare decisions in the hands of veterans and their doctors. It removes a lot of the bureaucracy surrounding veterans' healthcare. It strengthens opioid prescription guidelines for the VA. It improves accountability and transparency for the VA. And it also doesn't just focus on the post 9/11 veterans. It focuses on all veterans. I know a lot of older veterans feel like they're kind of put aside, and most of the focus is on post 9/11 guys. This one really focuses on those older guys, through caregiver assistance. So I think this is a really good bill. Hopefully this will go through shortly. We're still in, the negotiation process and, the sausage making, but that's a big one that we're working on. I would say, though, in my own opinion, that is another big one that I really care about, is mental health. There's the suicide epidemic that we've seen, recently. You hear these numbers like, 22 veterans a day, 20 veterans a day, committing suicide. And the thing is like, how do you trigger that? How do you, or how do you attack that, and make sure that veterans get the kind of care that they need? And a lot of these veterans that are going and to suicide, a lot of them have, other than honorable discharges. A lot of them have bad paper discharges, and there's this stigma on them that starts from when they were in the military, that precludes them from having the type of health care that they would have in the VA. So we're looking at ways to look at the moral injuries that a lot of these guys faced that kind of led them to the bad paper discharges, but there weren't bad people, and to try to get them the health care that they really do need. And it's a hard balance to make, but it's very, very important. So mental health care is a huge thing that we're looking at. And then the last one I would say is probably combating homelessness. You know, homelessness triggered up a little bit in the past year. HUD just did a point in time count last year, and they showed that homelessness and veterans went up, even though the VA was trying to, you know, combat homelessness. So that's a big one that we're looking at, and we're trying to make sure that the VA keeps their commitment to helping homeless veterans, you know, across the board. So those are some of the areas that we're looking at. There's a lot more there, but I always say those are kind of like the top line ones.
Mm. And you know, I've never spoken with a professional staff member before. I'm wondering, are there kind of common career paths? Like, where does someone go from being a professional staff member?
That's a good question. That is something that I'm trying to figure out. but you know, from what I've seen from other people who have been professional staff members, what I've noticed is that there is this, it's almost like this iron triangle in DC where you have the private sector, you have the federal agency, and then you have Capitol Hill. And so you're someone who makes it as a professional staff member from just what I've seen in the past. And, you know, I'm sure other of my colleagues might differ with me here, but you know, either they stick with it as a professional staff member for several years, you know, gain a certain reputation in certain areas. And when the right administration comes into power and they know the right people, you know, they get picked up to be appointees of some sort within the federal agency that, you know, they, you know, help oversee. And so then they go to the federal agency. I've seen it where guys start off in the federal agency and then they make their way through that pathway and then jump across to Capitol Hill, you know, to work politics for a while, and then eventually jump over to the private sector. You know, I've seen, you know, various bios, you know, from high level officials that go over to, you know, Lockheed Martin or Raytheon or, you know, big companies, you know, with the type of experience that they have. I mean, I guess it's being a lobbyist essentially, but, you know, working in issue areas that they really do care about. And they're probably the best advocates for those areas. It's debatable, but I see the pathway kind of like in that triangle. I've seen some folks that stay as professional staff members for 20 years and, you know, maybe become like a general counsel or a staff director, and then, you know, retire and maybe start their own consulting firm or, you know, so. I guess in the way of DC, that it's this triangular form that I've seen.
And what advice do you have if someone's listening? Maybe they're on active duty. Maybe they've recently transitioned and they're wanting to become more active in public service or in politics in particular. Any advice you would give to them?
Yeah, I mean, I would say two things. Like, you know, first, don't lose that sense of service. You know, I know a lot of guys that, you know, they wanted to serve the country in the military and, you know, protect our nation. And then when they get out, you know, they go and start a company, which is fine. Like, that's great. But there are some guys that probably have a knack for public service and they shouldn't discount that. If they do, it's not a problem. If they want to go into politics, they totally should jump into it and not hesitate, you know. And I feel bad that I hesitated, but I don't know, maybe one day I might. But, you know, this country needs veterans to be on the front lines of public service. You know, our representation, you know, in Congress is dwindling. And to have public servants that dictate what national security policy is going to be, and you only see a very small percentage of those who have served, to not be able to voice, the opinions of national security, that's bad. And we need more folks who have served, who understand what that sacrifice is, to make the right decisions, in terms of national security. But I would tell any veteran to jump in there. And there are a lot of great support groups for guys who want to jump into politics. There are great political action committees out there, PACs, that will support veterans. I really think that veterans should get out there more, especially in this upcoming election. Whether they're Democrat or Republican, I think they should jump in and try to do something, whether they run themselves or they help someone out. But I think the other thing I would say is, in terms of bridging the civilian military divide and trying to understand the other side of things, but to also help the other side understand our side of things. And I think that's really important. And we can't do that unless we step onto, the front lines, if you will, of public service.
And, you touched on this, but I'm curious what recommendations you'd have for people interested in this, whether it's books or organizations or conferences, podcast seminars, anything that they could check out that might help them better understand this type of career path or just kind of better prepare themselves for it.
Yeah. I have a tendency to kind of nerd out a little bit, and there's this, I like to try to understand things outside of national security and veterans issues. And, I read Issues for Debate in American Public Policy. It's from a CQ researcher. They basically have a roll-up of the latest policy debates, the latest issues that are out there. And they publish it. I want to say it's like every quarter. No, I don't think it's every quarter. It's like every half year or so. But that's a really great roll up if you're really wanting to get into public policy and have like a broader understanding of what's going on. But then of course, I like to read The Economist or Foreign Affairs. And then I always keep touch with, Politico and Roll Call and The Hill for, politics, because, working on Capitol Hill, if we want to kind of have an idea of what's going to happen that week, we kind of know how politics, where the political winds are blowing. So, I would also say that, for the guys leaning on the right, turn off Fox News and go watch CNN or, MSNBC. And for those guys leaning to the left, turn that off and go see the other side. But, always keep an open mind and try to understand the other side, try to talk to people from the other side to, get a broader context of what actually is happening. You may find some value in it.
That's great. Well, I always like to keep the last question open-ended, which is more of, we've covered a lot of ground today. What have we not talked about that you'd like to share with listeners?
Oh, geez. I guess the biggest thing for me, and I kind of touched on this a little bit, but is about the civilian military divide and how we as veterans can close that gap, and then help our civilian counterparts close that gap as well. I really think that's a growing problem for the veterans community, and for our nation as a whole, for various, macro reasons, like I told you the example of, policymakers not really having a deeper understanding of, what national security really means because they didn't serve. All right. Not to their fault. They're serving now, but, they kind of lose that context when there's a lower percentage of those who have served. But what I would say is, that, you know, I'll give you an example. I told you that, you know, when I was 29 years old, I left the military. I went to go work on Capitol Hill, and my first boss, who was the military legislative assistant, great guy, I love him to death. We went out for a couple beers, saw a ring on the ceiling, and I was like, "Hey, you know, where'd you meet your wife?" And he's like, "Oh, my husband. I met him." And my immediate reaction, and I was raised, you know, more towards the left, and that kind of thing, you know, philosophically was I was okay with. But my immediate reaction was, "Oh my God, that's terrible." And I felt horrible right after that feeling. And I came to realize that, wow, like I have been in this military bubble and I'm now starting to step out of it. Fast forward to Harvard real quick. And, you know, one of my first couple days in orientation, one of my fellow students came down to me and she said, "Hey, I heard you're in the Marines. You know, have you seen the movie American Sniper?" Like, yeah, I've seen it. Did you like it?" I said, "Yeah, of course I liked it." So yeah, I watched it with a Jordanian mother, and
Oh,
I thought it
man.
was absolutely awful and terrible. And I'm thinking to myself, like, well, that wasn't the point of the story. Like, you know, the point of the story was more along the lines of like PTSD and like what he suffered through, and you had to see that suffering. And she didn't understand that. And she got really upset with me, and she asked me, like, you know, how many people have you killed? And it was just, I like it left a really bad taste in my mouth. And it wasn't until like 6 months later that we sat down for happy hour, and we talked for a couple hours. And I heard her side of things, and I told her my side of things, experiences that I saw, you know, secondhand through my friends or personally. And I would say that it got emotional. You know, and she was in tears at the end. She said, "Steve, I'm so sorry. I had no idea. I never understood that. I had no one that was serving the military, and I never knew that." And so it was because of that that I, with a couple other folks, we started this. We started what's called the Veterans Impact Day. It was guy Josh Welly, who's actually running for Congress right now. He started it the first year, and then I picked up. Picked it up from there. But basically what it was is we would go out to the Harvard community and try to recruit students who had no military experience whatsoever, whether it was through their family or themselves or anything, and mobilize them to go out to the Boston community and reach out to veterans and help them out for one day to foster the conversation to bridge that divide. And it was super impactful. You had a lot of students coming back like, "Well, I had no idea." And you know what? On the opposite side, the veterans that we took with us, they felt the same way. And I really do think that if we can find a way to bridge that, you know, at each individual level, it'll go a long way. And it'll be a really big impact on our society. The question is, how do we do it? And that's why we need veterans on the front lines of public service.
Awesome. Well, Steve, I appreciate your work that you're doing, and I appreciate the support you're providing the veteran community and just taking the time to share your story with the community today.
Well, I appreciate you having me, and I hope it helped, but this has been an honor, so I appreciate it.
Thank you so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Steve. Hopefully, for those of you who are interested in politics, check out the politics section of the beyondtheuniform.io website. You'll find episodes about new politics. You'll hear about Steve Barney and his run for Congress. Lots of other relevant interviews if this has piqued your curiosity. Also, just another plug to check out the publications section at beyondtheuniform.io. There are a bunch of free ebooks, there's videos, there's all sorts of great resources, including two books that I've published so far about what I've learned through over 160 of these interviews. You'll also check out the new videos section. That's something I'm starting to invest more time into. If you like that or the publications, let me know and I'll try to invest more time in that direction. Have a great week, and I will see you next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career. Take care.